Hey guys, it's Nikki here. I'm back in my home city of Melbourne, and that's where I'm recording my section of the podcast today. I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners and custodians on the land in which I am recording, the peoples of the Kulin Nation. I also pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.
Hello guys, welcome to the second part of our International Women's Day episode. Here me, Nikki and Isan will again present three female historical figures which have changed the world and which should serve as an inspiration to us. We hope you enjoyed, and please don't forget your Rosini cocktails. You can find the recipe in our social media accounts, or you can just listen to the first part.
And we do need to give a trigger warning for this episode. We mentioned themes of death by suicide, rape, coercion, violence against women, victim blaming, victim torture, and pregnancy loss. If any of these are triggering for you, we advise you to just sit this one out. And if you are triggered by any of these themes, please seek the relevant support in your country. Okay. So the next gal I want to talk about also comes from the ancient world, and she's very close to my heart because we know of her through Herodotus and his writings on the Persian Wars, and she was a key player actually in those wars. So her name was Thamyris, and she was from the 6th century BCE, and she was a widowed queen who ruled over a nomadic Eastern Iranian tribe called the
Masagetai,
who were a warrior tribe notable for their battle skills that occupied what is now modern day Iran. And basically, like, to summarize why she's so great, she battled and won against the expanding Persian Empire and its ruler Cyrus the Great in 529 BCE. Cyrus the Great, I mean, it's in the name, he pretty much founded the Persian Empire, which was back then known as the Achaemenid Empire, and basically began the expeditions and the Persian Wars. So what happened? Cyrus proposes to Thamyris.
Yeah.
Proposes, literally, will you marry me?
Oh.
And this was a means to try and sneakily steal her land.
Of course.
Thamyris? Yeah, nah. No thanks, don't want ya. No. Cyrus declares war. Fragile. Declares war. He sets up a trap by sending his weakest soldiers to put on a bougie banquet to lure Masagetai warriors into a drinky frenzy. It was led by Thamyris' son, Spargapacis. They take the bait and are slaughtered by Cyrus's men. Spargapacis manages to avoid being killed, and Thamyris is fucking pissed. She sends Cyrus a message demanding the release of her son. Cyrus refuses. In the meantime, Spargapacis kills himself, which further fuels Thamyris' rage.
Oh, shit.
She retaliates in a fierce rampage that ends in the decapitation and crucifixion of Cyrus. And legend says she stuffed his head into a wine bag full of human blood and laughed, "I warned you that I would quench your thirst for blood, and so I shall." So she stopped pretty much like one of the most like advancing people, leaders of the Persian Empire. Thamyris is her name.
Wow. What happened with her? Like, did she lead an army against him, or was it a bit more of a sneak attack?
I don't think Herodotus actually describes it in detail much, but because he's the only source we have on her, and we all know what kind of a history blogger he was in terms of accuracy, it's hard to know for sure.
OG travel blogging.
And she's not very well known. And like in the ancient world, that's pretty big stuff. And that should be like wildly known. Like if you go read an article on this guy, like he's famous. He had the Achaemenid Empire. He had the Persian Empire, well, which became the Persian Empire. His sons later took on the roles of leaders. And it's like, it just says he kind of died. It doesn't mention how he died. And it's like, you got to give the girl the credit.
Yeah. I think a lot more people would have heard of Cyrus.
Exactly. So I give you that.
Okay. So my next lady is an a female artist from the 16th century, which is pretty extraordinary in itself because we have very few female artists kind of recorded throughout history. So her name was Artemisia Gentileschi. She was an Italian artist born in 1593. Her father was quite a famous artist of his time, like not one of the greats, but he was well thought of. And he could tell that she had a talent from a young age. So he decided to train her up after himself and, you know, put her to work in the art studio, mixing paints and kind of, you know, learning his craft. And then as she got older, he could really see that she really did have talent and it was worth embracing. So he hired a few kind of art tutors for her, mostly from among his group of friends and other artists that he associated with. So the main one who took over her studies was called Agostino Tassi, and he became her art tutor when she was a teenager. But unfortunately, Agostino Tassi was a complete dick, and he decided that he was going to rape her when they were trapped together in her art studio, and he kept her quiet with promises to marry her, like kept saying like, it's okay, like what we're doing is fine because I'll marry you and, you know, we'll live happily ever after. But he had no intention of doing that because he was already married. So he, yeah, just completely kind of used her and left her, and her dad was furious after, because obviously her reputation was on the line. Back in kind of the 16th century, your reputation as a woman especially was so important. So her father took Tassi to trial and kind of sued him or prosecuted him for her rape and also kind of deflowering her virtue, as it were, like because that was just as important for her reputation so that she could get married and things going forward. So they went to trial and Artemisia was called as a key witness, and they actually tortured her to establish that she was telling the truth. Her fingers were like bound with thread super tightly to the point where like the circulation was cut off, and it would like, you know, be really painful. And especially as an artist, your fingers are so important to you. So it was a really kind of cruel type of punishment just to establish that she was telling the truth and that it hadn't been kind of a consensual relationship that she'd had with him. And Tassi was found guilty, and, you know, Artemisia was shown to be in the right, but it didn't really matter because Tassi had friends in high places, so he just swanned around doing what he wanted anyway. But this episode really fueled Artemisia's creative side. It gave her great inspiration. She'd already been tackling subjects of women who were in precarious situations, such as Susanna and the Elders, which was painted in 1610, just before this episode, where basically it's a biblical story where a bunch of old men were perving over this young woman who was bathing, and her virtue is called into question. So maybe, you know, this was already happening, and that was like her relationship with Tassi was already underway, and that's what kind of influenced her painting this subject. But yeah, so she really took that and ran with it, and then many of the paintings that she created after that were of women in either positions where they were being wronged by men or where they were taking back agency. And so her really famous paintings are of, she did a series of Judith slaying Holofernes, which is another biblical story, basically where a widowed woman, her area, like her village, is invaded by an army forces, and Holofernes was the captain of the army. And so she goes to him and says that she's going to submit to him. She gets him drunk, and then when he's drunk, she cuts off his head. And she wins for her people. So that was like a recurring theme in Artemisia's work. And she did not shy away from the blood spurts and the kind of force. Like it was two women pinning him down and sawing off his head with a knife or with a sword. So yeah, she was pretty brutal with it. But, you know, all power to her.
Wow. It sounds like she was very wronged in the past. So
oh, and And if her art was the way for her to kind of get her voice heard and for her to share her message, then fair play to her. Like, that was completely what she embraced. And her paintings are pretty famous now, especially in recent years. She's had a real revival, and she's had shows at many big galleries across the world. The National Gallery in England has recently had a big show of hers with some of her key paintings. And for a long time, again, as a woman, she was kind of dismissed. And a lot of her most famous paintings were actually attributed to her father, because obviously they have the same surname. So people assumed that they were his works and not hers. But no, she was a great artist in her own right. She was the first woman to become a member of the Accademia di Arte di Signo. I probably pronounced that horrifically, in Florence. But yeah, she was the first woman to become a member of that. And she had an international clientele, including dukes and royalty. She traveled the world. And yeah, she was a bad bitch. Like, fair play to her.
Amazing. Good on her. You know,
when you said about her father, like that society thought that her father is the one behind the paintings. I was at this exhibition in Madrid some years ago, and it was about visual artists from the beginning of 20th century. Mm. And it was interesting that women during that time, the only way they could be published was if they take male
names. Yeah, there's quite a few instances of that in English literature, for sure, of like the author actually being a female, but being published under a male name.
So, I don't know, speaking about artists, maybe we can transition very nice to the last one that I have. Frida.
Ah.
We all know Frida Kahlo, right? And don't you feel that capitalism has embraced her as the... Because I feel that when we say feminism nowadays, I'm sure that she's within the first five feminist figure that pops up to your mind, right?
Yeah, probably.
Nikki, don't you think so? Like, literally, I'm sure if we ask 10 people on the street... feminist icons, like 9 out of 10 would probably say Frida among their first three choices. But she's not really a good feminist example, but okay, we'll come to that later. So yeah, we know Frida Kahlo is everywhere, movies, museums, t-shirts, souvenirs. Like, she's literally a global icon. Like, last year in November, her painting Diego and I was sold for $35 million.
Wow.
Which made her the most expensive Latin American artist. And kind of confirmed the obsession that the world has with Frida Kahlo during the last few decades. But you know that this Frida mania started just in the 90s, just 30 years ago. For example, during the 80s, there was an intention to do an exposition about Frida Kahlo in Paris, but no museum was interested.
Wow.
But during the 90s, Madonna said that she was a fan of Frida. Then we had the success of the movie Frida, Have You Watched It, Girls?
Mm-hmm.
With Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
Amazing movie. And from then on, together, I think, with the growth of social media, Frida Kahlo kind of became a pop icon. But okay, like, briefly, I'm just going to tell you something about her life. She was born in 1907 in Mexico City. When she was 6, she had her first health issue.
No.
She had polymyelitis, and this impacted severely her right leg. She started drawing when she was 18 after a tram hit the bus she was traveling with. Mm. And she was again injured. Mm. She had to stay in bed. Her dad put a mirror on the ceiling and created some kind of a system that would facilitate her to paint. So imagine she was just laying in bed for long months, and the only thing that she could paint was herself. And that's why from then on, she said that she stayed a lot of time by herself, alone, and she paints herself just because that's the only object she knows the best. In 1928, when she was 21 years old, she married Diego Rivera, which was 20 years older than her. And just so you know, Diego Rivera is like one of the greatest Mexican artists ever. And in this time, he was the greatest Mexican artist. And in 1930, she had an abortion. Later, she had a second unsuccessful pregnancy. And in total, she had 3 lost pregnancies. Mm-hmm. And the last one happened while Diego, her husband, was cheating on her with Frida's sister.
With her sister? God.
With her sister, yeah. So after that, she separates Diego Rivera, mm-hmm. but he continues to support her financially and to care about her a lot. Anyway, in 1938, she receives Trotsky in her house while he's in exile. Hashtag, we have peak angry Stalin trying to kill Trotsky during that time. So she... So oh, she receives Trotsky in her house, and later, with the help of André Breton, which is a very famous French author during that time, she has an exposition in New York, which is relatively successful. Next year, she does one in Paris, where she meets all the famous surrealists at that time. And it's very interesting because she says something very interesting about her experience in Paris and Europe. So I'm quoting her. "All surrealists make me vomit. Marcel Duchamp is the only one who is down to earth. They are such bloody intellectuals and so degenerated that I can't stand them anymore. It was very useful to come to Europe and see how pretentious it is. And those rogues are the reason for all the Hitlers and Mussolinis they have here." Oh, don't you think it's very resonant with nowadays, guys? Anyway, in 1940, she remarries again for Diego Rivera. But this time, the relationship is different. Frida tells him... by the way, Frida is very sick. And in that time, Diego Rivera acts more as a father and Frida acts more as a mother to Diego. For example, before marrying again, she tells him explicitly that she doesn't want to have any sexual contact with him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. And during the 40s, Frida continues drawing and she finally starts to receive some type of a recognition, but her health state is really bad. In 2 years, for example, she has 8 surgeries on her back. 8 surgeries. And she stays 9 months in a hospital. So, for example, in her first solo exhibition in Mexico City in 1953, they have to put a bed in the gallery so that she can lay down. And the same year, she also suffers from a lung infection. And doctors advise her to not go to a protest against the U.S. intervention in Guatemala, to which she eventually went. You know, she was very left-wing. And 2 days later, she died.
Oh, wow.
Because of that. Yeah. In general, the feminist movement embraces Frida because of how she portrays an idea of a beauty, which was previously accepted as marginal. It is also very progressive the way she embraces suffering and her health problems and her free sexuality. She had multiple lovers. And these themes kind of fit perfectly with the feminist movement, you know? And she was one of the first women who tried to be different. But, okay, so we have to remember, guys, don't you agree that the first and most important pillar of feminism is that you have to be independent economically, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can.
So she was economically supported by her dad in the beginning, like for a lot of years, and then by Diego Rivera, including the years during which they were divorced. Okay, we have to say also she never imagined that she would become more famous than her husband. But yeah, during that time, for a female painter, it was very difficult to make income, you know? So yeah, she needed to be supported by them. There is also this interesting relationship between Frida and capitalism. We have so many products with her face. We even have a Barbie. Have you seen it? There is a Frida Barbie, you know?
Is there?
Yeah. Like, I literally think that except for Mona Lisa, she's probably the most commercial art product that we have nowadays. Like, if you put flowers on your head, you're immediately a Frida Kahlo,
yeah,
don't you think so?
True.
And the monobrow, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
My mom has like 5 handbags with her on. She's like started a collection of yeah, Frida handbags.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, that's bad because she has become so dominant in the cultural landscape of Mexico. And it's the only only Mexican team that competes with Frida Kahlo is probably pre-Hispanic art and archaeology from the Aztecs mm-hmm. and Mayas. Like, she's true. So dominant. Like, Mexico is such a big country. They have so rich culture. And everything that we associate Mexico with is literally Frida Kahlo, except for the Mayas and Aztecs. Like, she's so dominant. And this happened in the last 30 years.
Yeah. So she's even in that Disney film, Coco. So even, like, commercial empires like Disney have embraced her as a cultural icon.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I think it's also related to social media in a way because her paintings are very colorful, very expressive, and they fit really nice social media platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And people really engage very easily with that. We have to be honest, like, Frida couldn't be the feminist that we are nowadays. And she also couldn't have the views that we have for marriage and sexuality. Like, society back then was very different. I think this also applies kind of to all the women that we talked about now. Like, they are not probably classical examples of feminists as we know it nowadays, but just because society then was so different.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm thinking, why did feminism adopt it, Frida Kahlo? Basically, she's one of the first women who was representing herself in her paintings. And this was super uncommon. usually only men were drawing women back then, and usually the women that they were drawing were their partners or lovers.
Mm-hmm.
She's also an example of going beyond the social norms, a person who fights in her life. Can you imagine how many surgeries she had? And she managed to persevere through all this stuff and to continue painting and be a productive person. She was very liberal. She was saying what she wanted. And it's not by chance that she was adored by intellectuals like Trotsky or André Breton. And most importantly, there is this duality in her art. When you see her paintings, she represents basically the yin and yang, you know, in a way that she reminds us that we can be in love, you can suffer, you can be heartbroken, you can be happy. And when you see her art, people usually associate with the authenticity of these diverse feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, I feel, is that because of her, female art is more respected and accepted. And interestingly, in the end, she managed to escape the shadow of her successful husband.
Yeah.
And she's now more successful than him.
Now everyone would know her name and not his.
Well, wow, look at that. I am so happy to wrap up this episode by knowing and learning myself about at least four other feminist figures that I hadn't really known or known about in so much detail as before today. So I hope you guys, our listeners, have taken a slice of this pie and learnt about one, two, three, or maybe all of these female figures and how great, boss, and bold they have been in the past.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially because so much of history, you know, we're all very passionate about history, all three of us, obviously. That's why we do this podcast. But so much of it is from a male perspective.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's really nice to really highlight some powerful women and their achievements.
Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe should we say that people should remember that feminism is not just about economic equality, which is an important part of the whole puzzle, but it's also about social...
Guys, Polly's just going to mansplain feminism to you right now. Polly, go for it.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, feminism is equality of all. Of everything, not just one thing.
Yeah. Equal social, economic, political opportunities for women to be treated the same, to have the same amount of respect. And it's not just for International Women's Day.
Every
it's for every day.
Every day.
Gain
and fight for your equal access to all. And for those in privileged positions, help women gain equal access to all.
So you can follow us at Museums Mojitos in Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
Yeah,
and that's the podcast full name on Facebook.
So follow that if you like.
Yeah, follow us on there.
Engage with
Actually,
TikTok, guys.
Subscribe, do all that. And can you guys follow us on Twitter? Because I've been engaging with that and like nothing. We're really failing on Twitter. Please engage with our tweets.
Okay, well, that's us done for another episode. So bye, guys. Thank you for joining and see you next
time.
Bye.